lectionary readings for this day when we celebrate the transfiguration of the Lord begin with Exodus chapter 24, verse 15. Listen for the word of the Lord. Then Moses went up on the mountain, and the cloud covered the mountain. The glory of the Lord settled on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. On the seventh day, he called to Moses out of the cloud. Now the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a devouring fire on the top of the mountain in the sight of the people of Israel. Moses entered the cloud and went up on the mountain. Moses was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Continuing from the New Testament, Gospel of Matthew, chapter 17, beginning with verse 1. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. And his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." And while he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud, a voice said, "This is my son, the beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground. They were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up, do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The word of the Lord. I don't know why teachers do what they do, but I always remember in eighth grade, our English teacher, Mrs. Roberts, had the entire class memorize Robert Frost's poem, "Stopping by the Woods on a Snowy Evening." And then each of us would recite it in front of the entire class. Yeah, that didn't go so well. It astounds me how teachers ask us to do these things that we don't understand why we're doing them for maybe 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years. And then all of a sudden, maybe, if we're lucky, we understand. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch the woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. Gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there's been some mistake. The only other sound's the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Thank you, Robert Frost and Mrs. Roberts. That experience of depth is what I think of when I think of the divine. The experiences of God manifest themselves in a great many ways, but that includes sometimes those experiences of profound quiet. The sound of snowflakes falling in an empty forest. And off by ourselves, we experience in the beauty, the depth, that experience of God, that there are certain times and places charged with God's holy presence. Jesus goes up that mountaintop experience, looking for that sort of transcendence of God. But there's a twist to Jesus going up the mountain. He doesn't go like Moses alone. Jesus goes up with Peter and James and John to the mountaintop, which is to say, there are some types of experience that we Christians have, these experiences of God, that we cannot have alone. We need other people with us on the journey to help us discern and see what is going on. The holiness, the divinity, the distinctiveness, God's purpose. In the Old Testament, it talks about God in terms of holiness quite often. That changes in the New Testament. They don't talk about holiness as much. And I think part of that has to do with Jesus changing the meaning of what holiness is about. Rudolf Otto starts out, when he talks about holiness, he defines it as, and he uses the Latin here, mysterium fascinans et tremendum. Mysterium fascinans et tremendum. You don't need to know Latin to know that means a mystery that is fascinating and yet powerful, even terrifying to see. There is in our experience of God this experience of depth that leads us to awe and amazement that God is the most profound beauty, the most fascinating even to the point of being terrifying. Of course, you and I live in a world where it seems like people's concept of God has been downsized. They're too busy to go to holy places, much less go to holy places with other believers. Modern people have tried to turn God into their little buddy, their domesticated God, really their personal shopper. God, we need this. God, we need that. Please be a good God and go get that for us. A kind of modern religiosity that doesn't need to spend time going to worship or spending time in prayer or opening ourselves with other disciples to what God may be saying in the silence. No, we seem to have everything handled until perhaps we come up to one of life's limit experiences, and then we discover how small we are and how short life is. And how little power we truly have. I believe we need those mountaintop experiences with other people of faith to help us experience again the height and the depth and the breadth of God's mysterious presence. We need a sense of God that's not trivial, not just for us, but beyond us. We need that sense of transcendence, that mystery that is so filled with awe that it's even terrifying at moments. You know, we have this wonderful hymnal as a spiritual discipline. That's what a hymnal is. It's the words and the music of people that have come before us. And sometimes, wouldn't you love to have a conversation with one of these authors? And yet, maybe not. Maybe because of the profundity of what they say, that's enough, and that's what they really need to communicate. That opening hymn this morning, immortal, invisible, God only wise, in light inaccessible, hid from our eyes, most blessed, most glorious, the Ancient of Days, almighty, victorious, thy great name we praise. Unresting, unhasting, silent as light, not wanting or wasting, thou rulest in might. Thy justice like mountains high soaring above, thy clouds which are fountains of goodness and love. To all life thou givest, both great and small, in all life Thou livest the true life of all. We blossom and flourish like leaves on a tree and wither and perish, but naught changeth thee. When the disciples go up that mountain, I think that's what they experienced, that radical otherness that is God, that radical otherness that all of a sudden they become aware was in Jesus. They find themselves connected to the most profound experience. And there, all of a sudden, Moses and Elijah show up, the embodiment of the law and the prophets. What is going on? Have you ever been out on a lake and you look at the water and the light coming down shimmers on the water so much so that all you can see is the reflection and you can't see any further than that? But all of a sudden a cloud passes over, and when the cloud passes over, you can see down into the water. You can see the depths. These depths that may go down who knows how far. It was there before. It's just you couldn't see it until the cloud came. It's an unveiling of the depths. I think that's what was going on with Jesus in that mountaintop experience and the disciples. The depth of Jesus had been there all along. He had always been shining. They just couldn't see it. And Moses and Elijah, the embodiment of the law and the prophets, that's who Jesus was. It was just the disciples couldn't see it before. And now just for a few moments, they can. For a few moments, they understand the height and breadth and depth of who this man was. And you can tell in their response, they don't get it. They start chattering along about, well, if we could build you some tents here and you could stay and we can kind of keep this mountaintop going. And God cuts them off and says, this is my son, the beloved, with whom I'm well pleased. Stop chattering. Listen to him. This is my son. There's a relationship between Jesus and God that is unique, that speaks of the height and depth of who Jesus was. And it's a calling not to stay on the mountaintop, but Jesus is called to go down and live in the world, down in the world where you get your hands dirty and where he encounters conflict and where his body is broken, where his life is taken. He goes down off the mountaintop to come to the cross. That's what comes next. The disciples had a revealing, just a few moments to help them begin to understand what's going on. The calling of who Jesus was in relationship to God. And so as the disciples had that beginning understanding, so this is a gift to us that we come to understand that we too have a calling as they did to listen to Jesus. And no, it's not to live on the mountaintop experiences, though I think we need to have some of those. But we're not set apart, we're singled out. And that's the difference in holiness between the Old Testament and the New. I think in the Old Testament, the focus was on being set apart, being above, not getting your hands dirty, whereas Jesus very much is involved in the world. It's a calling not to a status, but to an awareness of God's presence that singles us out to live in distinctive ways to share the love and justice that God intends. Singled out to devote all of our actions to the justice and righteousness of God, to the renewal of life and the renewal of God's creation. The holiness of God speaking to us about how our lives are to be different as we listen to his Son. That we're to get our hands dirty, to get involved in the world, to be willing in our lives to follow Jesus, as we listen to him, to sacrifice, even to suffer, because we have seen beneath the surface of the lake. We've seen the most real of realities in the sacrificial love of Jesus. Just for a moment, we see him shining, the fulfillment of God's dreams, the fulfillment of Moses and Elijah, the fulfillment of the law and the prophets in the redemptive prophetic work that calls for justice to fall down like water and righteousness like a never-ending stream. And so in the gloomiest of seasons, we can still see in our minds that light that we saw on the heights in the mountaintops, shining in Jesus. We can still see the light of Christ shining, not on the top of the mountain, but on the top of the cross. There on the cross in all the squalor, his clothes completely bloodied, gleam shining white. There on the cross hangs not the victim, but the victor. Not the despised one, but the beloved one, the Son of God. And Jesus tells his disciples, tell no one about this vision, because they wouldn't understand. The disciples themselves don't understand. The story goes on to have them talking about, well, was this an experience of John the Baptist? And they just keep on chattering on because they don't understand. But they will. The cross is what comes next in the story of the life of Jesus. As he heads down off of the mountaintop, as he heads down into Jerusalem to confront the world as it is, as he gets his hands dirty, as he loses his life. But then all of a sudden, after the cross, comes this new message where the world is made new. And the light of Christ shines again, now into eternity. It requires a complete break from one's former state of death and despair and cynicism and sin, as the disciples come to discover who they are in the light of Christ. Jesus says to his disciples, don't tell anyone, they're not ready. What was it they'd seen? A vision? They kept questioning. What was he talking about, that rising from the dead? Maybe that's what these mountaintop experiences are about, is an ability to start questioning and to wonder, what is it that God is doing in Jesus? And what is it that God is doing in us? The holiness of God, redefined on the cross, re-envisioned and revealed in Jesus Christ. The mysterium fascinans et tremendum. The mystery, the fascinating mystery. The awe of the power of love embodied. It's beautiful and yet terrifying what comes next. Like the disciples, we really don't get it. Or maybe just for a moment, we do. And that is even more terrifying. And profoundly hopeful. Amen.